All right, folks, we are back on the flagstick.com Tea Talk podcast. Masters week has come and gone, and I'm kind of sad. It's not going to be 6 months. It's going to be another year before we sit down and watch another Masters. But Stefan Tiedorf here in studio with Scott McLeod. Scotty, how was your Masters weekend?
I can't complain. Enjoyed it, obviously. A lot of nuances to it, which we'll talk about during the show. But, hey, it's always good to watch golf from Augusta National, for sure.
Did you take my advice at all? Did you find a time to get up and do a quick household chore so you didn't feel like an absolute slob and the wife didn't hate you all weekend?
I tried to sneak in a few things here and there. Definitely, that was great advice for sure. And I'm sure a few people heeded it and probably were better off for it for sure.
What's it like for you to be able to go, you know, you're watching it and you see something like all of us and you're like, hey, I can go and try that right now and fire up the simulator and hit a few and try that out. Like what is that like for you? It's obviously the dream come true as we talked about, but you know, did you get out in the garage into the cave and hit a few over the weekend?
Yeah, actually I hit some in the morning. I did a radio hit on TSN at 10 o'clock, I think on Sunday morning. So I did it out there and then hit some balls beforehand. Cause obviously the players had only the bottom of the field had teed off at that point. So I got the bug out there. You know, a lot of people were obviously texting me and stuff saying, hey, I'm out playing golf today. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. You were one of them.
Yeah, obviously. Got around him.
Yeah. So, it's nice to kind of be able to do that. And I watched some clips and stuff in there too, of some of the older ones, just flipped it up on YouTube while I was hitting some balls. And it was kind of cool.
Yeah. It's a shame we can't get together. I've been itching for some swing tips. Was able to playing decent, just like weird things for me where like three putts all of a sudden, just had three putts. One was from 8 feet.
Wow.
Made like just an awful tee shot, made a great recovery, hit one close to 8 feet, hoping for par, and walk away with a three putt double. And it's just like, those won't happen again. And then
you got to think, you know, it's pretty early in the year, probably earlier than you'd normally get out and have decent weather. So, you know, any golf that we have right now, especially in our area, is pretty much bonus as it is.
Yeah. Plus greens at this time of year, you're not going to have consistency from each green. One might be an eight, the next one might be a five, the next one might be a 10. You have no idea, right? They're very natural, but just so happy to get out. Got another tee time plan for the weekend. Pretty busy week around here with the kid and the wife.
The roommate. So it's the kid now. It's not the roommate.
He's both, you know, roommate kid. Yeah. Right. We'll get to that. But we got to give to a giveaway. We mentioned earlier a few weeks back, we had a TaylorMade hat giveaway. Thanks to Todd Frazier over at TaylorMade. The guest this week is Tomo from TaylorMade. Yet again, back on the Tea Talk podcast. Yet again, he has avoided doing an interview with me. Just Scotty was able to make it this week. So we had a couple Sim 2 hats to give away, Scotty, to a couple listeners of the podcast that entered the contest on Instagram at Flagstick Golf. We both picked a winner. Who is your winner of the contest? And why don't you just give a quick breakdown of what the photo they're actually commenting on was?
Yeah, so it was a photo of a player in a large pool of water, obviously looking for their golf ball, maybe, or looking for their golf game.
It was me looking for a golf ball.
Was that you?
Yeah, middle. Pond in the middle of a fairway a couple of years ago. Middle of a fairway at a golf course, and you couldn't see it over the tee shot. Hit over this small hill, and you're like, oh, right down the middle of the fairway, feeling good. Boom, right in this massive pond. And it was, hey, it's a Pro V. I'm going to get that.
I just thought it was like some stock photo. I didn't realize it was you looking for your golf ball. No, that's
me, baby. Yeah. So who did you pick for your pick for one of the Sim 2 hats, the new driver by TaylorMade?
Yeah, I went with the real Justin 95. He basically was obviously trying to mock one of his buddies. His caption was, "Hey John, is this casual water, John? I don't think so. Play it as it lies."
All right, not bad, not bad. I went with a different route in honor of your old age. I went with Crookshank Stewart, and he says, "It's always the worst when your balls hit the water."
No comment.
No?
All on that.
So I got a quick story. I used to work at a casino back in the day as a casino dealer. I think you know this. Maybe I mentioned on the podcast before. And one of my buddies, he used to run the, he was early on one of the janitors, helped clean up. And early on in the casino days, an old gentleman comes up to him and he's like, "Hey, I got a complaint for you." He's like, "Okay, like what's going on? Something not clean?" He's like, "No, everything's clean. But the water in the toilets are too high."
Oh, God. Oh, God.
And the guy just looks at him. He's just like, he's staring. He didn't know. Like, it took a bit to process, which probably for listeners out on the 401 driving themselves off the highway right now. But that's what that comment reminded me of. Great. Always my funny story. So you both win a Sim 2 hat. We actually got some more coming from Todd Frazier, some new ones. These style I'm really liking. You'll see them on players over the next couple weeks. They also have those new raw wedges coming out. So we 3 hat giveaways coming up. Look for those at Flagstick Golf on Instagram. We'll also pitch it out on Twitter, and we'll get some more hats to in people's hands. So Scotty will be reaching out to both those listeners, and we'll get your shipping information. We'll get you those hats as soon as possible. Yep, but let's hit the week that was, Scotty. Birdie, par, bogey, and an honorable mention. What is your birdie for the week at the Masters?
Well, obviously everything's pretty much Masters, that's for sure. You know what? I think it was two things. You know, obviously there's a lot of attention on the win by Hideki Matsuyama, but I think the historical performances as well by Tsubasa Kajitani, who won the Augusta National Women's Amateur, who was 17 years old. It's pretty significant to have those two players from one country win in a matter of 8 days. So it's just cool. I mean, we'll see it in our when I talk to you, Tomo, as far as our interview and how important it was for the country of Japan. But just to see how powerful that can be, and how it could inspire people in Japan. And, you know, you're talking about a country that's golf crazy as it is. So my birdie of the week goes to those back-to-back performances, not just the one that will get the attention as far as the Masters, but the Augusta National Women's Amateur as well.
Yeah, I think it's a good one. I think Hideki's getting mixed reviews, not from the sense of it being Hideki, and yes, he can be a little bit of a robot out there. And, you know, I saw a great tweet, someone saying he doesn't speak much English, but he doesn't speak much Japanese either. He's just a quiet guy.
Yeah.
My understanding, talking to a few guys, is that his caddy is an absolute beauty. Looked like he was getting in one after the win, which obviously you do. So my birdie is for him, Shota Hayafuji. I apologize if I'm not getting his name right. The bow on 18. My understanding, doing a quick research, is that this is actually regular practice for caddies out in Japan at certain golf courses, I guess, and just showing, you know, gratitude to that golf course. And, you know, now he's a major champion caddy. Hideki, we always thought he had the game to be a major champion. Awesome to see him have the green jacket. And I'm going to say it now. We thought we had some good menus for the meal. This is going to be the best menu next year ever, I would assume. Assuming he does what most Masters winners do and stick to their natural or their cuisine from their country of Japan. Like, what are we going to get? Some like very high end steak, some sushi. Oh, that's one where I think I'll be jealous. I was not jealous of pigs in a blanket or kibasa. Was it? Kibasa and I don't know, breadsticks or whatever they ended
pigs
up naming
three
it.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Whatever they ended up naming it. But this next menu next year it's going to get some good reviews, and I'm giving a birdie to the caddy, and obviously Hideki just played great throughout it. And unfortunately, we'll get to your par right here, and easy transition. I feel like this tournament kind of lost a lot of viewers after that rain delay. It just kind of, from there, it was done.
Yeah, it sort of fizzled a little bit, and that's why I gave it a par. I mean, you know, the Masters is always exciting, normally, in a lot of cases. You know, we've had some great finishes over the years, and that's one of the great parts about Augusta National is that usually there's something happening. You know, that didn't happen so much in November when Dustin obviously took a fairly large lead, and in this situation as well. I mean, Hideki obviously was dominating the tournament, had a large lead there. If you look at the scoreboard now, you know, it looks like it was was a lot closer than it was, given, you know, kind of a late effort by Zalatoris and the triple by Xander. But overall, with the exception of the emotion of the win, it was fairly dull as far as watching. There wasn't a lot to worry about. You know, even when Hideki hit the ball over the green on 15, I mean, he still just made a bogey there.
What was it, like a 240 shot? Yeah, 4-iron, hit 275, a laser.
Yeah, it was crazy. So it was missing that element. But that said, you know, when I was watching it, I was feeling that same way, and it got done. But as soon as, you know, Hideki won and he was walking from the back of the 18th green and you could see the emotion that he had, that's when for me that all of a sudden I went, wow, that's actually a powerful moment. And that's why it's so important, even though, you know, he won going away. But overall, I'd just give that a par just because, you know, it didn't lend itself to that big charge by somebody on that back nine. There wasn't that big level of excitement. Not to knock, obviously, his performance, because it was fabulous.
No, I agree. And it could have had it if not for my bogey this week, is just Xander on 16. Just an awful, awful shot. Like, literally, the only spot you can't be on that. If he's up top, he's probably making a par. I know Hideki was way up there, and he ended up making a bogey. But, you know, Xander, he can't do that. It's the one time you can't. At that point, you know, he makes par there. Who knows? It probably does change a few things coming in, for especially Matsuyama, maybe on 18. You know, he knew he could make bogey to win. And maybe there's something different happens. You don't know. But, you know, he doesn't make a triple. And now we're talking two guys at 10 under potentially. So could have been way, way more exciting. I also need to give myself a bogey for the worst take ever on this podcast. I said last week, Will Zalatoris will miss the cut. He finished second.
and I had somebody actually text me about that and said, hey, are you going to give it to your podcast partner over his Zalatoris pick? And I'm like, you know what? He's already messaged me admitting his mistake. So don't worry about it.
I also had John Rahm, same thing. And John Rahm looked tired up until Sunday and then said, hey, you know what? I've been sleeping alone and getting good night rest and everything's good. Maybe I'll go fire out a little low round on Sunday and see what happens. So, yeah, bad pick by me. Easy bogey.
Oh, well. It happens.
I'll hit my par and then we'll hit your bogey. Sure. I'm going to give a par to Hideki flying commercial home to Japan with a layover while holding the green jacket. And the reason I give it a par is I kind of respect it. I give it a par because it almost just humanized the green jacket so much that when you just see it just over some guy's arm, my buddy John was saying that today. Happy birthday to John. He was like, just kind of looks like a crappy old jacket when it's just laying over your arm. Like, who needs a green jacket? And like, I thought it was interesting. All these photos are coming out, but nobody's really going to bug Hideki. I get times are different too, it being COVID and everything. And also Hideki, you know, not being a guy that you're probably going to get a conversation out of outside of maybe a thank you. But I just thought, you know, I don't know which way to take it. Do I love it? Do I hate it? It's my part. I just don't know.
Yeah, it was kind of odd, but cool in some sense. And you're right. I mean, it just looked like any other jacket just laid over the back of the seats at the airport with this guy, you know, texting, maybe catching up on a couple of emails or stuff like that or whatever. But, you know, we're used to, I guess, a lot of the fanfare, especially when, you know, we have the American winners and they do the, you know, they do the circuit of all the talk shows. And, you know, you see them jumping out of a limo with the jacket on and, you know, they put it on and everybody's like, ooh. And here he's got it folded over his arm, thrown on the back. He's not even wearing it. Like, you'd think, you know, if you'd won the Masters.
Yeah, I'd be wearing it.
Yeah, you'd be wearing it through the airport, right?
Yeah, so 100%. Yeah. And also, like, somebody could just grab it off of him, too. I mean, you're in an airport. Like, it's the safest place ever. But, you know, someone just grabs that and runs, you know, you're in trouble, Hideki. You're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, why don't you give your bogey? Or I think you gave it already,
I did. Actually. You're good. Yeah, you're up for your bogey.
All right. Well, you know what? You know, a lot of the things happening these days, you know, we're seeing a lot of different issues that are happening in the world. This was a really cool thing. And the fact that, you know, this player from Japan won, and I have to say, I was pretty disturbed when all of a sudden I posted about it on my Instagram and someone took that opportunity to decide to comment that, you know, hey, Hideki, you should learn some English. Like, seriously? Like, you know, obviously this person was blocked right away. It was just a really ignorant, racist remark. Wasn't really necessary, and I was not impressed at one bit. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, as far as tolerance and things are concerned, I mean, it's a big world. There are a lot of languages. One language doesn't necessarily mean it's more important over others. So, you know, it inspired me to maybe want to look into maybe, you know, learning more about Japanese and, yeah, and speaking Japanese, not the other way around. Like, don't sit there and just because Hideki as well, you know, decided, obviously he had his interpreter there, he can speak English.
He speaks it pretty well from my understanding. Does. He just doesn't want to
he doesn't want to mess
the wrong
up.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So he's trying to be careful in certain situations, especially formal situations. That's why he has his interpreter there. So the remark by somebody to say learn English, you know, it's uncalled for, not necessary, and sorry dude, you're blocked.
Blocked. I love it. Yeah, I agree with you. I'm going to go down another route, and then you can maybe finish it positively for the week. My honorable mention is a DQ for Wayne and Gary Player. I'm giving both of them. I'm absolutely done with his entire family except for his estranged son who called them Mark. Out on Mark on Twitter. But if you didn't see it, the opening ceremony tee shot, Gary hits it, but they're honoring Lee Elder at that point. The guy can barely stand up. Let's be honest. How many more Masters is he going to be at? If any, this was his time to shine. And there is his idiot son standing behind him, just doing some guerrilla marketing, holding this box of trash golf balls that, you know, Gary Player is only playing. I don't even care what this company is. You can call me out for that. That Gary Player is only playing for money. They knew exactly what they're doing. Everyone's saying, you know, I didn't think this was the, you know, we didn't know this was happening. Wayne saying, you know, I was just wanting to show off with the ball when my dad was playing. Wayne has quite the past. This should not surprise anybody. He got banned from Augusta National. The only reason Gary Player is not in that boat as well is just because he's won so many times there. He's one of the honorary starters. But, you know, time is just hurting Gary more and more. I know we had him on the podcast. It's an honor to have a six-time major champion or seven. I don't remember. I don't really care anymore either. But, you know, true colors seem to come out and come out more and more from the Player family. So I'm going to give them a DQ, but I'm giving Mark a birdie for his response to it on in response to Kyle Porter on Twitter, basically just saying like he was correctly banned. He's embarrassment. Like, don't know why he was there in the first place. Shout out to Mark. Would love to hear that guy's story. Just, you know my thoughts on Gary. We had him on this podcast. Yeah. It was something. I've had enough. Disqualified. This is the last time. The last time I will be saying the name Gary Player on this podcast.
Yeah, I don't think there's much you can add to that. If anybody wants to look through the history and the issues that you know, Wayne Player has had before related to the Masters, they can certainly look for that. It was just such bad form and so disrespectful, especially for a situation like that, you know, where it's so very important to focus on what is happening and what is on hand. And like you said, you know, there might not be an opportunity for anything like this to happen for Mr. Elder in the future. So, you know, it was a big moment and it tarnished the moment, and that's just not acceptable.
Yeah, DQ'd.
DQ'd. I like it. All right, my honorable mention, I've got two real quick ones here. Got to give a birdie to Corey Connors. You know, great job. The fact that, you know, he went back-to-back top 10s in the Masters in November, and obviously now in April, he joins
the year
John
prior.
Rahm.
Remember, he was in the mix the year prior early. Yeah. He obviously fell out, but they were rolling. Yeah. They're rolling. He played. He's going to, I think he's going to win here. I like, if he can get that putter going, he's going to win here, but go ahead. Sorry, I mean, cut you off.
Yeah. Oh, no worries at all. So, you know, he joins John Rahm, Patrick Reed, and Cam Smith, the only players that had top 10s at both of those Masters. You know, really hard to do because they were two different golf courses. So you're right. It shows his suitability to this golf course. Obviously pretty exciting for them to get the hole in one, which, awesome. You know, I said that on the radio hit that I did on Sunday, and the fact that, you know, I had to check my phone. You know, I saw the notification. I'm like, no, that's got to be wrong. But then you're thinking, no, the Masters is not going to put out a, you know, bad notification or whatever. I mean, he's rolling as it is. So it was cool. It was neat to see. And then my other one is exactly what you already talked about, which was the Hideki's caddy and this bow to the flag at the end of the Masters. I think that's it's a poignant moment. I think it's an all-time moment that will be in a lot of reels for a long, long time. Again, you know, as you mentioned, you know, there is a bit of a tradition of that in Asia as far as caddies. But to see it there at this time, especially, you know, in the US and Canada too, there's been a lot of anti-Asian sentiment that has happened unnecessarily in the last little while. And seeing how that person is so respectful to the golf course compared to maybe a player.
Whoops.
Or a player calling it a par 67 or whatever. You know what? Just be better. That's really what it amounts to. And I think if that's a beacon for a lot of people to look to and realize that maybe it's time just to throw out all the BS and let's just be respectful. It's not that hard to do. You just got to take the time to do it. So big honorable mention, Birdie, for those.
Love it. Our picks didn't do that great. I had a couple missed cuts. Corey was the best of the bunch at T8. No one won, unfortunately.
No.
So
no wine.
No wine being exchanged this week. But, you know, all your guys made the cuts. Mine, not so much. Well, we'll get to our RBC Heritage picks in a bit. But we're going to hit our interview with Tomo Bystedt from TaylorMade. Before we do, Bob Weeks did a great job on the broadcast this week. Obviously, yeah. Graham Dillette was out there. We were chatting about how many egg sandwiches he was going to have. I set the line at 8.5. Seems like we got an insider information. So what did you hear? How many did he hit?
Well, you set the over at 8.5, the line at. I took the over and said 10 exactly. Mm-hmm. And then he was posting about Graham Dillette, obviously demolishing 12 this week. And so I asked specifically to Bob, you know, kind of what was the total, what it amount to? And he said, 12 for Dillette, 10 for me. I lost Graham when I tried the new chicken salad sandwich. Poor decision on my part.
It's a lot of salad sandwiches for these guys.
I know. It's not my deal, though. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I liked when they had the barbecue chicken sandwich that was there, but, you know, pimento cheese or egg salad.
Yeah, you had some hot spice. Not a new take, but you were going off about pimento sandwiches on Twitter again, and like you're gonna get banned if you keep it up. There's new policies on Twitter. Like Augusta could come for you.
Brendan Parsons, the GM at Listowel, where Corey's from, was enjoying them. He made his own version of it, and you know he's a great cook, so I assumed he'd come up with something better. But yeah, he was bugging me about that a little bit. But I just really amounts to orange paste. He didn't like that.
Did Brendan sleep, you think, all week? He was kind of off his rocker on Twitter. Both accounts were going.
Yeah.
You know.
He had to do a bunch of driver fittings and stuff, too. He was doing that when the hole-in-one
I'm sure those guys are going to. Some kid's going to get a lefty driver because he was looking at his phone following Corey's every shot. Yeah. A lefty, extra stiff. It's like a lady that's a righty that, you know, 65. She's just going to get her Sim 2 driver. Just look at what the heck. All right, whatever. We'll take it. Like, this is what he said.
I think there's probably no other person in golf that was probably more excited to have a rain day yesterday and their course was too wet that he didn't open today. So I think, you know, he got a chance to maybe get a little bit of rest in, but certainly he was going all weekend long, justifiably so. And then, you know, I think everybody saw what they did there. You know, the local Tim Hortons came up with another a donut for him again, which they did 10 years ago as well. But it's kind of neat just to see a small town support their player and get excited about it, and it's fun to follow. And Brendan as well, one of his kids had the chicken suit on, and they were shooting videos where every time they'd make a birdie, you know, they'd be dancing around and whatever. So it was just a fun way to follow, and it's just great to see a lot of Canadians kind of get into it
for sure. Well, let's get to our interview this week. Scotty, what were you chatting with Tomo about?
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what we were talking about. You know, Tomo Biestad, who's a senior director of product creation at TaylorMade, you know, known for quite some time. And, you know, he has a Japanese heritage and lived for some time in Japan as well. And obviously, you know, tied deeply into the golf industry. And, you know, I wanted to get his thoughts on the importance of the wins at Augusta National, why they were important, what the impact will be in Japan as a result of it. And even that moment at the end, as far as the cat bowing and, you know, the significance of that. And Tomo was gracious enough to take time out of his busy day to have a chat with us at Tee Talk. And I think people will enjoy his insight. Welcome back to the podcast, Tomo Biestad, who's been on this show before, but, you know, a special reason why he's on. Obviously, a lot of people are familiar with the Masters and the ending this year, and it was spectacular. The Augusta National Women's Amateur as well. And first, welcome, Tomo. Good to have you back.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Yeah, first off, I mean, obviously I want to start with a tweet that you put out, which I think was really poignant and prompted me a little bit to say, hey, let's get Tomo on here. You know, I've got a fair number of friends that are tied to Japan in the golf industry, and obviously it's a vibrant industry there, and a lot of them were up late, and maybe I couldn't get a hold of them, but they were having a good time, which was great to see the celebration. But just to read out your tweet, huge congrats to Hideki Matsuyama on an unbelievable Masters tournament. As a Japanese, it was truly an emotional and thrilling moment to see Hideki finally bring a major home. Now, there's a little last bit to that as far as I'm proud to have also created two of the clubs that he played this week. That never gets old. But, you know, the big thing there is the first part. And I really want to get to your thoughts as far as you watching the Masters this year and what you were feeling and thinking the whole way.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's interesting as obviously working for a manufacturer and working at TaylorMade, obviously, I'm always rooting on our athletes and hoping that they do well and that our products perform well on the big stage. And you know, it was fun. We had some guys in the hunt that and some guys playing our product that was exciting. But obviously with Hideki, it was different because, you know, he's Japanese. I'm actually half Japanese and I've spent a lot of my time growing up and I've worked in Japan. And so I do feel like a strong bond and my family is Japanese. My wife's Japanese as well. So, you know, we definitely feel as though, you know, we can relate to that. And I think for me personally, I sometimes, you know, you kind of wear two hats. You wear the I'll work for TaylorMade hat. And then you kind of wear your hat that kind of emotionally where you're at a little bit, just history wise as well. So, you know, when I grew up and, you know, I played golf a lot in Japan and I felt like Masters is always the big thing in Japan. They Japan is a culture of history and tradition as well. And the Japanese really revere that tournament for the tradition and the fact that, you know, Masters hasn't changed. It's just, it's the same location. It's the same tradition. It's the same opening song every year. And so I think the Japanese really latch onto it. And it is the biggest thing of the year because they're not part of the Ryder Cup or anything like that. So it's really the Masters. And I feel like every year when it used to roll around, you know, the media circus around the Masters, Japan has a ton of journalists there, as you know, and it's just a huge thing. And whenever a Japanese player is doing well, it just amplifies the whole scene, right? So we saw that in the 90s with Jumbo Ozaki and those guys playing well from time to time. Toshi Izawa was there. There was a few guys who were kind of in the hunt, and obviously nobody closed the deal. And so this time, you know, with Hideki, and, you know, he had a nice lead, and I thought, you know, anything could happen at Augusta, especially on the back nine. And I felt like, you know, he was so cool and collected all the way through, but it gets to everyone. I mean, we've seen that, you know, even the most sort of confident, strongest players have crumbled under that pressure. And it's not a surprise at all. And I mean, Hideki was very nervous, as he said in the interview afterwards. And you know, it was exciting. And I kind of sort of felt like, obviously once, you know, we don't have a Team TaylorMade guy, like in the final groups or anything. If, you know, I was definitely rooting for Hideki and hoping that he would do well. And knowing kind of back home, back in Japan, kind of what the feeling would be. And I kind of obviously don't live there anymore, but I sort of had that feeling of, you know, I could just put myself in those guys' shoes. They're up at 3 o'clock in the morning watching this in the middle of the night. And the excitement just is unbelievable. And then the fact that once he got closer to the end, especially after 16 and when it, it was pretty much a done deal. I mean, it was pretty emotional watching that and just knowing what it means to everybody back in Japan, you know, and I still have obviously a lot of friends there and I have some family there as well. And yeah, it was pretty cool. It was a special moment for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously it wasn't a dramatic Masters right at the end. There wasn't a lot of things going on except for, you know, Xander obviously making the triple there and, you know, yeah. Hideki obviously had a quite a lead. So for some people, maybe it was anticlimactic, but I don't think anyone was adverse to seeing the emotion that he had when he walked off at 18. And, you know, you could tell that, you know, he had tears in his eyes there and, yeah. and it just wasn't the weight of his own golf game and his own dreams. You know, he's carrying, you know, the weight of a nation there. And I think if anybody actually paid attention and saw that, and I assume a lot of people did, they would realize just how much it means. And, you know, just like when Dustin won in November and you see the emotion from a player that maybe you're not used to seeing that emotion from.
Yeah, I think it, you know, he hides it well, you know, and I worked with him a couple of times out on tour on different things, but I don't know him well personally. But I know that, you know, he gets followed around by a ton of media. And whenever he shows up at the driving range at a tournament, there's several media people with him. And he knows that he's kind of under the microscope in a certain way. And I feel like whether he feels that burden of the nation or not, I don't know if that's something that gets to him or if he thinks about that. But I certainly think that, you know, the relief and just the happiness that he must have felt walking off the 18th green must have been pretty overwhelming, even for a guy that kind of reserved, I guess.
So. Yeah, and I think one of the most poignant moments, a lot of people pointed to it. Now, maybe if people are not familiar, you know, with some of the Asian cultures and seeing, you know, caddies, you know, bow to a course or things like that, you know, you see in Korea, for an example. But a lot of people pointed to, you know, his caddy bowing to the golf course, showing that sign of respect. And I think that became a hallmark moment that we'll see for years and years to come. Unexpected for you? Delighted when you saw it? What were your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I guess for anybody who's spent time in Japan and know the culture, it wasn't surprising. I guess it was surprising to have it captured in camera in that way. And obviously, Shota, when he went up and did that, he didn't expect, I think, to be on camera or anybody would see it or notice it. Yeah. So, you know, from that point of view, it's obviously a very authentic thing. And I think he... You know, the Japanese culture is a culture of respect. And I think whether or not it's kind of you express it all the time or not, he obviously had that opportunity when he went to put the flag stick back in to sort of pay his respects in that way. And it was just a quick, you know, it was a split second moment thing. And I'm sure it wasn't even a conscious thing that when he did it, he just put the pin in and kind of felt that emotion at that time. And it was a cool moment to see him. And obviously, I think when we see the victory in the light of, again, what golf and what it means to the Japanese people and certainly to Hideki and his caddy, that was a perfect symbol of that, I think, of how maybe it's different for the Japanese compared to many other countries.
Yeah, and obviously it was a double up week at Augusta National for the country of Japan. Tsubasa Kajitani, 17 years old, wins the Augusta National Women's Amateur. And, you know, to have that happen within 8 days, I mean, it's quite possible that a lot of people here don't understand. And as you pointed out, as regards to the media and so forth, of how much attention there is on golf in Japan. And, you know, I'll get to it in a second, but, you know, it's not like there's a lack of top players in the world, be it the amateur and professional ranks. You know, all you have to do is look through the world rankings and people will see that there's 8 men right now in the top 200. On the women's side, there's 12 women in the top 200. And then we go over to the amateur side, there's 4 or 5 in each of the sides as far as top 50 in the world. But to have it happen all in 1 week, you know, how momentous do you think that is for the nation, especially given we have the Olympics we're heading, looking forward to. But how big is it in the Japan, do you think?
Well, you know, it was interesting. The Augusta National, you know, women's amateur was obvious. It's a new event and you know, there's not a lot of history with that in Japan, but the women's game is huge in Japan. And it's frankly overshadowed the men's game really for the better part of, I would say, 15 or so years now. just with the rise of a lot of the popular players like Kai Miyazato and Sakura and all those girls who came on the scene kind of in the early 2000s. And they really changed the whole landscape of golf in Japan, and the men's golf took a little bit of a back seat. And so I think for that reason alone, I think obviously the women's event was also very well watched and covered in Japan. I'm assuming I wasn't sort of following necessarily the media in Japan at the time, but obviously knowing from again, the Japanese love of a women's golf and golf in general, I'm sure that was something that was a huge point of pride for the Japanese as well. And then obviously for Hideki then to come on top of that with the Masters win of something of that magnitude, it's huge. And I think it's, you know, being an Olympic year, like you said as well, I feel like all the stars are aligning. I mean, it's the perfect time to do it. And I think it shines a light on Japanese athletes and Japanese sport and Asian sport as well. You know, the Asian community, you know, everybody's looking for heroes. And I think this is a perfect way to really boost everybody up and sort of feel some pride about that. And I think hopefully the Olympic Committee will put Hideki in a prominent spot in the ceremonies. And, you know, if he lights the flame or whatever, you know, being a flag bearer or something like that would be super cool for Hideki. And I think again, for golf too, it's going to be a nice shot in the arm for Japanese golf.
Yeah. It's kind of funny when we think about Japan needing a shot in the arm for golf. I mean, it's hard enough to get a tee time. I saw a great tweet, Luke Alvey, who obviously, you know, does coverage for the Masters, great broadcaster, has been on the show before, but you know, he spoke of his first situation of going to Japan for an event to cover. And he asked about going to play a round of golf, and they, you know, everybody sort of laughed at him, and the golf course he wanted to play didn't have, this is about 2009, I guess. Mm-hmm. And the golf course that he wanted to play didn't have a tee time for the next 3 years. So, you know, it is a different situation that's there. But again, you know, there's a situation, especially we go back to the win, you know, a couple of years ago by Hanaka Shibuno at the Women's Open, another boost to the game in that country for heroes. And, you know, maybe inspires them to think, hey, you know what, I can do it. I mean, you know, it's certainly possible.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was a huge win as well for Japan. And I think you know, like I said, that was another thing that boosted even more so the, you know, women's golf side. But yeah, it's interesting just to make parallels about, you know, playing golf in Japan. And because I'm not living there currently, but obviously I've been through the kind of ups and downs of golf in Japan in terms of popularity and tee time availability, if you will. And I remember back when I first lived in Japan back in the 80s, you know, we used to try to get tee times, and it was, I mean, they would open up tee times a month in advance, a lot of these courses, especially the public ones. We weren't members anywhere. Yeah. And literally like to the minute, a month before your tee time, you'd pick up the phone and it'd be busy because lots of other people are calling exactly a month before. And you'd literally be redialing 200-300 times before maybe you get through, or you get through and it's like, oh, everything's booked out. So, I mean, it was like unbelievably difficult to get to tee times back then. But then you fast forward to sort of 2000, 2002, and golf popularity had definitely gone down quite a bit. A lot of courses had more availability. And I mean, you could book a week in advance at a lot of places and get on. Now, since then, I think it has gone the other way a little bit and gotten more popular. And I think now, and especially during that time, there were some closures, I think, of courses as well. So, you know, things have gotten more competitive. And lately, obviously, with a lot of good things happening for Japanese golf, I'm sure that it's again harder to get tee times. It's probably not back to what it was in the early 90s. But yeah, it's again, all good for golf in Japan, in Asia. And yeah, looking forward to seeing what comes next.
Well, you know what? One last note here. Obviously, we should not ignore it. It has been a busy time for all the manufacturers and, you know, yourselves as well, coming out with a lot of great products heading into this year. But how have things been from your sense as far as from a manufacturing standpoint? Yeah. Obviously, you're on the creative side of it, so you're busy working on your projects, but you obviously got to see some things that are happening different on the business side of it. And the question that I have for you specifically is the fact that, you know, with so many golfers maybe coming to the game, have you guys changed what you've looked at as far as your product configurations, as far as needing particular things in your product line to address maybe the new and emerging golfers?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, Scott. I think, you know, you have to keep a finger on the pulse at all times. And through COVID, we've obviously seen a shift in demographics, new players coming into the game, which has been fantastic. And we were actually, you know, a little bit ahead of that curve. Obviously we couldn't predict COVID, but we were already planning ahead of trying to make a little bit more product available for beginning golfers, for kind of beginner to intermediate level players, just to give them more options, to give something that's easier to access, easier to understand. And obviously golf is filled with specs and you know, shafts and everything. And a lot of guys get overwhelmed. If you're new to the game, you don't know what to buy. And so we did just recently launch the RBZ Speedlight product, which is a more affordable set, easy to launch product, very forgiving, at a better price point. And so that's one thing that we're doing. Also with our inline product with Sim 2, which has done extremely well, and it's difficult to keep on shelves, to be totally honest with you right now, yeah, with the surging popularity. But that product's done great. It's done great on tour, but more importantly, it's done great with consumers. And part of the reason for that is that it is a more forgiving product. One of the biggest differences between Sim last year and this new Sim 2 is forgiveness. And we've made it more forgiving. It launches a little bit higher. It has a lot more inertia, a lot more MOI. So again, if you're coming into the game, if you want to, you know, get the best and, you know, you have the money to spend on a brand new Sim 2, it is the best driver, even for a beginner. That Sim 2 Max is incredibly forgiving. And so on two fronts, we're doing that. And then obviously, we do have other offerings as well. We have ladies' offerings with Kalea as well. Again, a really forgiving entry-level kind of product that a lot of people can play with really soft shafts, lighter weight heads, things like that as well. So, you know, every golf company has to position themselves now to make sure that we're catering to all the different demographics. It's, you know, TaylorMade as a company, we're not just a better player brand. We obviously have the best players in the world on our staff, and we make products for those guys for sure to be able to perform in the biggest stage. But, you know, that consumer who wants ease of play, forgiveness, distance, and all those things, we have that in spades as well. So that's really important for sure. And we're going to be looking at that even more going forward for sure.
That's perfect. Well, thank you for coming on today. It's always good to talk to you for sure. And, you know, getting your perspective on these specific topics that, you know, I know we've talked a fair bit in person before about Japanese culture and things like that. So, you know, it was cool to hear your thoughts and to hear the perspective, and obviously an amazing, amazing victories, and looking forward to a great year for you guys at TaylorMade.
Thanks, Scott. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tomo, for the interview again on the podcast. Haven't had the chance to meet him yet. You know, been on the podcast, what, two, almost three times now?
Three times, I think,
and,
now. But yeah.
I haven't ever met him, and he doesn't answer my DMs on Twitter. So that just means, yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, great week. We have the RBC Heritage this week. We're going to get to our picks for that in just a moment. But before we do, I picked up a couple of new putters this week, Scotty.
Ooh, the addiction is continuing, is it?
It is. So I found this bad boy, for anyone that can see my webcam, aka just you. A nice studio design by Scotty Cameron, in really great shape. It's got the rust kind of finish. I cleaned it up with some gun oil. Shout out to Reed. No Reed's hypotheticals this week, but shout out to Reed for the gun.
I'm sure we'll hear some soon.
Oh, I'm sure. He always has some. So pick that up for $200 on Kijiji. Pretty good steal. Sweet. Picked up a select. What is it? The new one. Oh, the new line.
Studio Select?
Special select. Okay. So that's nice. Still waiting on my one that's out at Scotty. It should be here any month now. And
nice.
Yeah, I said that any month now. It should be here.
Looking forward to seeing it.
Oh, it's gonna be great. But you know, I was telling you about these putters I was getting. You came up with a little game we're gonna play. Why don't you explain the concept behind it?
Yeah, what we want to do is kind of a used putter challenge. I mean, we're both into golf equipment, and I know a lot of people are perusing websites looking for, you know, looking for used putters like you were. But what I thought was maybe live, we'd go on to eBay and pick out four putters, under 50, 50 to 100, 100 to 200, and 200 plus. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be I guess it should have to be buy it now or whatever, but yeah, we'll just pick through and decide quickly. What maybe we'll set a couple minute mark on it or whatever.
Yeah,
what we would choose in those price ranges.
Let's go 30 seconds at a time, and we'll we'll start with the, we'll go from the 50 and then we'll go up. How does that sound?
All right. I gotta get through and look at it first.
Yeah, you gotta start at the same time. So I'm gonna set the clock.
All right.
You can set your parameters. And then we'll go.
All right.
Are you ready?
Maybe.
Now are we doing free shipping or shipping not included? Let's just go with the price of the putter.
Okay. Are shipping, we doing buy it now? Obviously.
You gotta go buy it now. There we go. I'm already set to buy it now. All right, you ready?
Yeah, best right. one you can find. No, it's gonna be hard to find one for under $50.
The clock
bucks.
Has started here. I see a Titleist Acushnet wide blade style for $25.
Is that your
I don't
pick?
Know if it's actually though a real one or if it's just the style. No, that's a real Acushnet. The original, bullseye. Oh man.
Really?
Yeah. Plus
how much is it?
$20 US. Something's wrong there. I don't know what's up with that. That's gotta be my pick right now. I set it for we have 10 seconds.
Oh my god. All right. Old stock Ping Answer 3. There's one on here. It's pretty beat up. It's like $47.
So yeah, I'm actually going with that. I got a Ping Karsten Answer putter for $42 here. Looks like it's in pretty good shape. I got to look here. Is this? Oh man, that's in great shape. I might have to just buy this.
We could end up shopping out of here.
Oh, you know, it's one of the old ones too. Where it says Phoenix on the back too. Back when they were built to. But there. Sweet. So, all right, that's mine. I got a Ping Karsten Answer. What did you get?
I had a Ping Answer 3.
All right, and then this Acushnet one is interesting. The bullseye. All right, what's our next window we can shop with?
We're gonna go 50 to 100.
50 to 100. All right, let me get the parameters.
I got one.
Hold
for
on.
Me.
Let me set the clock, man. What are you doing? You can't start. 30 seconds. This is riveting radio. All right, clock starts.
All right, I got a McGregor Bobby Grace Sarasota, 87.90. I like Bobby Grace stuff. It's a little bit of a mallet.
Bobby Grace putter for a while there.
Yeah, a little mallet with a little bit of an insert, single sight line. I like it a lot. 33.5 inches too, which is I like a little shorter putter.
Oh man, I found a couple. I gotta go. I found a Titleist Bullseye. Standard looks like it's in decent shape for $94. That's where I'm rolling with. So now I got an answer. I got a bullseye. I actually have one of those. I gotta get it fixed up. It's very very old, and maybe I'll send that back one day. I don't even think he would do it. Scotty wouldn't fix it because it's not Scotty, right? It's Acushnet.
All right, 100 to 200 is your next one.
All right. Hold on.
I know. Just setting the parameters here.
We got 30 seconds. All right. Okay. 3, 2, 1. Okay. Good. Couple nice pings in this.
There are some solid stuff here.
Yeah.
Oh, God. There's some ugly stuff, too.
let's see. Can I get a Scotty for this? Come on.
No.
Come on.
Oh, no.
No. Like that. I see a a Ping Sigma 2 Type 4 Platinum adjustable.
Yeah, I saw that. 188.37.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to go with.
I was just rolling right by that one, too. So, you know what? There is a... Oh, no. That's actually just a
what about
plate.
This? A Nike Unisize Retro Putter. That is cool, actually. Only $135. What about Ping Gnome belly putter for you? 40 inches.
Belly putter? I don't think so.
You ever dabble with the belly putters?
Mid-length, but no belly. I wouldn't kind of jam it in there, that's for sure.
No.
You know what? I'm going to take... There's an Odyssey... Tank 7 V putter. I like the Tank, a little heavier, 38 inches, which is not quite a belly putter, but, you know, kind of counterweighted. I like that model as well. Ooh.
Oh, nice Kirkland there. Nice Kirkland there.
I shouldn't. There's a John Byron black milled offset one that's there for 188. What about this
Ping B90 center shaft?
Oh, this is a bad. This is a bad game. This is going to cost money.
Yeah, we should move on. All right,
Last one is 200 and over.
200 plus. Oh,
yeah.
No parameters. Just 200 plus.
Yeah, pick whatever you can find for 200 plus.
Let's see what the highest price is.
I saw some nasty ones.
All right, I'm gonna go with this $39,000 Titleist Scotty Cameron 1996 500 special issue. Complete with putter rack. It looks like you're getting like six putters, actually. Yeah, you're getting a set.
That's no good. That's no good. It's gotta be one putter.
All right. Well, then that's it. Okay, let's see here. There's gotta be like a 009.
What is
this? Holy crap. You know, the Scotty Cameron stuff, it baffles me. Guys, like, they'll go on, they'll buy a golf bag off the website that's, say, $300. They'll post it on eBay for $3,000 and it'll instantly sell.
It is crazy, that's for sure. I am gonna go. I'm going
with this. I got a used Scotty Cameron Circle T 303 SSS Newport Tour putter, 34 inches. Comes with the COA. This thing is mint. Top line only has a dot. You know, I like very minimal on the putter. Yeah, that's got to be the one. I don't know how they're gonna get $9,000 for it, but apparently asking $9,000 for it.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go for a TP Mills custom crafted by David Mills, a sort of a garage type model or whatever. It's $1,883. Pretty looking model, not much offset on it. Beautiful little blade, got some cool stamping on it. Yeah, we'll go for that in $1,888.
Well, there we go. That was fun. Now, how much money did you just spend? All that?
Way too much.
Might be in the cart. We got the RBC Heritage this week. Great golf course this week. You got to really love this one. It's where Webb Simpson won last year, and I think everyone was taking. I remember taking notes of his caddy coming down 18, being like, "Hey, note for next year. You know, we got to hit it short of this hill." But like, and it just baffled me. Of like, oh, that's what a good caddy looks like. Why don't we grab our three picks? If anyone ends up being a winner, bottle of wine. I'm still due a bottle of wine. Just gonna keep bringing that up. You know what? I'm gonna take first pick this week because you get it every week, I think, for some reason.
I have so far.
I'm going to go with Cam Smith this week.
Ooh, nice.
I think he's playing well, finished last week really well.
T10.
Why not? Cam Smith, he's due for a win here. Let's, why not? I need that mullet with a win.
Yeah, I like that one. You know, it's hard to ignore Webb, but I think it's hard to ignore Corey Connors as well. Got some momentum. This golf course doesn't require as much pressure on the greens. It's really about ball striking more than anything. We got a lot of small surfaces. All he has to do is hit shots on the greens, and I think that will lend itself well to him because he tends to struggle a little bit on the greens. But if he doesn't have any long putts, he's probably not going to struggle with speed. So I'm going to take Corey Connors for my first pick.
I like it. With that kind of mindset, I will go Abe Anser with my second. Kind of was non-existent last week. People thought he would be there. Going through a little bit of a caddy shuffle as his caddy kind of sorts things out up in Canada before getting back on the bag down there. Why not, Abe? He's got that elite short game. I think he probably is mad he didn't play as well as he wanted to last week. So let's pick up Abe Anser.
All right, that's a good one. You know what? Again, back to the ball strikers. I'm gonna jump on the Z train. I mean, you know, coming off the second at Augusta National, I like Zalatoris' game, and I think Harbour Town's a really good fit. Really great as far as approaches to the green, you know, strokes gained as far as that's concerned in the approach to green. He's up there in the tops on tour, and you know what? I think he's got a lot of momentum going into this, and we'll see him get a win.
I like it. I'm going to finish this off with, I actually don't believe this guy will win, but I'm going to go with just a theory of he was so upset not to be holding the 18-hole lead at Augusta National, even though I tweeted out that he will be, even though he wasn't in the field. Charlie Hoffman. Charlie Hoffman this week. I said, everyone get your bets in for Charlie Hoffman for first-round leader. And he wasn't in the field. So, hey, this week he wins. He'll be in the field next year. And then he will have that first round lead at Augusta National.
All right. Digging through the field here. One player I'm going to ignore, which a lot of people are probably, you know, yelling at us.
Oh, DJ
number one in the world. But yeah, not going near him. You know, hasn't had a lot of success here. So not going to jump in on him. Matt Fitzpatrick didn't play great at the Masters. T34 there. But again, this really suits his style of the game. He's got two top 14 finishes here at Harbortown. Really good as far as off the tee hitting fairways, which is so important at Harbortown. And you know, anybody who's been down to Harbortown and played you know, the Lynx course there, is they know it's not even about hitting fairways, it's about hitting the side of the fairway to get the angles into the green. I like Matt Fitzpatrick as my third.
I like it. So I got Mullet, I got Answer, and I got, he had a mullet at one point, Charlie Hoffman.
Yeah.
You got CC's, Altors, and Fitzy to That'll wrap it up. One. It's going to be a fun one. It's a golf course I enjoy watching. I don't think I'll watch much up until Sunday. Little out golf watched after the last week of, like, you know, what I did, one of my, on Sunday or, no, it was Saturday morning, I got up and I watched every single shot of the first 2 days of Sandy Lyle.
Seriously.
Yeah, I just went through it. I just threw it on. Nothing was, golf wasn't on. Bo wanted to be up, so we were chilling, and I was watching Sandy Lyle.
And what did you learn?
Well, it made, like, my thought was, like, if I go and play, I think this was what it will be like. They, like, I'm going to make some mistakes out there. I'm going to put myself in these places. He probably hits the ball further than I do. But yeah, I would assume this was probably roughly what it would be like if I played probably the members' tees. I think if I'm playing the tees they played from, you know, I don't think I'm breaking 90. You know, would you, do you think you break 80 from the back
tees? From the back tees?
Tournament conditions, putting everything.
I would have to be putting well. I think the problem is going to be is that, you know, you could be in the mix for 16 holes. I just think there could be a couple of big number mistakes that would really, you know, make that not happen. So a quick aside, actually, you know, a little sidebar story as far as Sandy Lyle. When I left Scotland in 2014, one thing they do at the old course in St. Andrews is they post the tee sheet for the next day and you get to see the draw, because obviously everybody puts their name in the ballot. They get to look up on the draw and see who's, you know, teeing off the next day. And just before I left St. Andrews, I was leaving on that Sunday morning. On the Saturday night, I happened to be going by in front of the R&A and I looked at the sheet, and Sandy Lyle was teeing off the next morning. So the last thing I did before we left town was I popped down to the first tee and watched Sandy Lyle hit it off the first tee at the old course, which was pretty cool.
Was he wearing suspenders?
I don't think he was at that point.
Now, you had a buddy play in the media day at Augusta National claiming some ungodly amount of putts that you do not believe. You want to call this member out and maybe break this down a little bit? I need the inside scoop here.
Yeah, well, he had a message posted on his personal Facebook that he had 24 putts in the 18 holes. Now, a little different than the regular media lottery, he's part of the broadcast team, and he has been for 30-plus years. So he's heavily involved in the TV side of it. So he's probably played Augusta National 30 times. But 24 putts is certainly exceptional, and I get it. They played off the member tees, but a little bit questionable. He is a decent player, though, I will tell you that.
We're going to drop a name, or are you going to let that go?
No, I'm not dropping his name, because it was a private-type situation or whatever, except I had to give him a little dig on that one. He claims he shot four over, which I could believe off the member tees. He's a good enough player that way. But the fact that he did it with 24 putts, I still haven't dug in and found out how many greens he hit.
None. But
none. That's exactly what I'm thinking. So so I'll wait. And if I get more details, I'll let you know.
Went with a full Patrick Reed round out there.
Maybe.
That's good. All right. Let's hit the mailbag, Scotty.
All right, let's go. I got six of them to deal with this week. Obviously, there's still some Masters domination within the mailbag, but what's the difference that Japan is doing to make their golfers become so dominant? Winners of the Augusta National Women's Amateur and the Masters is the question from the listener.
From my understanding, and maybe you can probably dive in more, it's just more coaching at a younger age. They have it in almost like schools and things, and just way more of a popularity of a sport than, you know, what happens maybe here in Canada, where we only have a limited season. And then the States, there's so many sports. I don't know. What are you hearing? You're more tied to that side of the world than I am, obviously.
Yeah, I think dominant is a bad word. I mean, the Augusta National Women's Amateur obviously had a close ending where we didn't know what was going to happen there. And the winner ended up sort of backing into it a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're winning, you know, these events every single year. So I think dominant is a poor choice of words. I will say, though, and if people listen to the interview with Tomo, they would hear that obviously there is a lot of Japanese players that are in the top 200 in the world on the women's side and the men's side, and then also in the amateurs as well. I think it's just dedication, and I think that goes back to what you're talking about. When an athlete in Japan chooses to do a sport, they basically throw themselves all the way into that. Is it great overall for everyone? No. But for the elite players, the ones that get to the top of the world, obviously it can produce an exceptional talent. And you end up with players that do this. There's a great pride. There's a great support system for the players. So I don't think that it's so much dominant. And I'm not saying it was luck that they won these two events. But let's just say it's just more of a coincidence that they have two Japanese winners over anything. All right. Do you think Hideki will be carrying the Japanese flag at the Olympics or lighting the flame?
Yes.
Yeah. this one's hard to answer. I mean, I hear that there's some surge by some Japanese athletes in other sports. I mean, I don't pay attention to a lot of things. I hear that there's some people having impacts in like motor car racing and different things, but I'm not sure. He's definitely going to be part of it, especially given it's the Summer Olympics. Golf very important in Japan, so I'm sure that they will integrate him in some way as part of the ceremony. Masters is bigger than anything.
He's getting one or the other, if not both. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be awesome. I think this is going to really light a fire under the whole Olympics this year. I'm looking forward to it. It's like having that fifth major. It's going to be exciting. People that are like, I'm not going to watch. You're a liar. Get out of here.
Yeah, and the courses are amazing too. I mean, that's the one cool part about the TrackMan Simulator. They have a number of golf courses that are from Japan. So it's pretty cool to go and see some of those golf courses. And it's just spectacular as far as the scenery, elevation.
Is the one they're playing on the TrackMan?
No, the one they use for the Zozo Championship but hopefully we have the one that they're using for the Olympics at some point.
We'll have to get around and play it.
Yeah, it'd be cool to see.
See who wins the gold.
Yeah,
exactly. Bring your daughter in. We'll do like a gold, bronze, silver.
I was gonna say, otherwise we can't. We're all going to be medalists.
I mean, everyone gets a medal these days. So
of course. Yeah. All right. What player was the biggest flop relative to expectations at the Masters? Who was the biggest surprise?
I mean, this is the easy answer of Dustin Johnson. It's gotta be. You just set the record. You can even make the cut the next year. Watching him come in on Friday, and it was unfortunate that coming in on Friday, those last groups, none of them were even sniffing it. Like Rory, no. Right there with them. And you have to watch them come in, and you could tell just Dustin didn't even care at that. He was not even trying at that point. He was just going through the motions. It looked like Rory was actually giving it a shot, getting a little bit upset, but Dustin was like, hey, I don't got it right now. And whatever. It's gotta be Dustin. I don't think it can be Brooks, just from like clearly the knee was bugging him, but for me it's Dustin. I said Rory, so I'm gonna make you give a third.
Yeah, that's pretty hard to I don't know, as far as a three. I mean, I'm sticking to Dustin for sure, but I mean, trying to pick a third out of there, I don't know. When you look through the numbers, I mean, there's a lot of players that, you know, you said right away that, hey, these guys are not going to make the cut, but those two just stood out. And, you know, I guess the hard part for him is the fact that he's got to stick around for two extra days to hand out the green jacket. So I'm going to waffle on that and stick to those two. Well, I know you're going to try to pin me to a third.
No, I got a couple more here. Sungjae Im beat one guy that is basically retired. Yeah. Sandy Lyle and Fred Couples beat him.
Your new hero, Sandy Lyle.
Yeah, he beat VJ too. I apologize. Which kind of got to a different point. I think it's time for these guys. When the bottom says Mize, Singh, Lyle, Couples, and it's going to be there year in, year out, is it time? I feel like we're getting there where it's like, okay, boys.
They're not taking anyone's spot in the field. So, you know, Alathabal, nobody expected him to make the cut.
No, but he did.
He did, exactly. I'm not saying, you know, I'm expecting Larry Mize to be making the cut all the time or whatever, but, you know, or Ian Woosnam or whatever. But I would probably say, if I had to look down that list then, Jason Day. There's another guy. Plus nine, you know.
Matt Wolf pulled the who was the guy a few weeks ago, a month ago, that signed for he apparently shot 90 something and signed for a 79.
Oh, Gámez. That was Gámez.
Wolf pulled a Gámez at Augusta National, DQ'd himself so he didn't have his score there at the bottom.
Yeah, the other one would be Cantley. That's partly why I didn't pick him this week, you know, just based on that, I'm missing the cut. You would think he would have been solid based on his normal play, but, you know, that wasn't the case. That said, who was the biggest surprise?
Before I get to that, you know what's weird with Matt Wolf?
What's that?
Once he was disqualified, all his shots erased. You could not go back and watch his shots.
Really?
Yeah.
And I didn't even note that.
You can go down and you can watch all of Larry Mize's round if you want to get weird like me. And every both rounds, Matt Wolf, you can't watch a single shot of Matt Wolf at Augusta National both days.
You can't watch Siwoo Kim bust his putter either.
No.
Erased that one.
Yeah, that went away pretty quickly. Biggest surprise, Stuart Sink. Finishes T12. I know he's been hot. Stu's up there in age, but he's part of the bald community. And in our meetings recently, we did not think he had a shot at Augusta National. His name wasn't being brought up. And just nice to see him there. Kevin Na as well up there. We said putting is important, but Kevin Na, kind of the only one that, you know, of that group that I was mentioning last week, actually did that. You know, Brian Gay did not, as I said, Zach Johnson did not, but there's Kevin. But yeah, for me, I'm going Stu Sink. Who about you? Biggest surprise?
Probably biggest surprise for me probably would have been a guy like Stenson. I didn't think he had anything coming into this tournament.
That's good. I said he couldn't bring 80 coming in this tournament.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, he didn't finish great. I mean, he was 76 in the final round and was T38. But the fact that, you know, he hit some great shots, was on TV, had a few decent scores, I would have expected he would have been fighting it out with Larry Mize on Sunday, just based on the way he was playing. And you know,
playing it for Sunday. What? Like at Augusta Country Club, playing
exactly. Exactly. They would have been having a side match over there. So so Stenson probably for me.
Cool.
All right, on to our next one here. If you had to choose mat or grass at the driving range this time of year, which would it be and why?
You're gonna have to go play in the soggy grass in the golf course. Go play. May as well have the soggy grass on the range. So I'm always gonna pick the grass. Unless it's like, hey, the mats, you're at the place that has grass, you can only hit irons. At the place that has mats, you can hit everything. Then maybe I'll go over there, because for me, that's the easiest thing to go is my long game, where I need to hit some more woods. But yeah, give me the grass all day, baby. That makes me sound like Cheech and Chong movie.
I'm going to say grass as well. I mean, especially if somebody's an avid golfer and they've been inside all winter and hitting off of mats, you know, you can cheat on a mat and get away with it a little bit. You can have that club coming down a little bit early and still get some contact out of it. Whereas, you know, grass is real. You know, that's where you have to golf. You know, if you're going out, I guess, the first practice session, just trying to make some clean contact, make some balanced swings, that's fine. But yeah, I'd go for the grass as much as I could just to get back to being real golf and not the inside stuff and get back used to playing outside again. All right. What's the worst shot you have ever hit in a golf tournament?
Oh, probably this year. First tee shot at the Flagstaff Open. I straight, not even a cold top, like Healy top. Healy top straight.
Almost into, missed the face.
Like I actually got a good probably like 30 yards advantage from that because I didn't cross where my like where the drop zone was for the drop is like a good 30 yards in front of where my ball ended up. Like that's how bad that first tee shot was. So yeah, probably that one. Whatever.
Yeah. I've got two. I've got one as a junior, one as an adult. One as an adult actually happened actually at the Flagstick Open as well. It was when I was still an amateur and I played and I was doing my playability for the PGA and I topped one off the tee, which you've seen before.
Oh, yeah. Was it 3-wood?
It was. Always is. I have a little bit of tendency to swing up a little bit.
Andrew Tackler.
Yeah, exactly. A top one into a bunker. But I would say one of my all-time one was in a junior tournament. I was playing in a golf course.
1972.
No. It was 1980. Would have been about 85. Oh, it was a junior tournament. And let's say I was fighting a left to right shot at that point. And unfortunately, the day of the tournament, the wind was blowing super hard left to right. And I figured, I'll be fine. I'll just aim left a little bit more. Of course, you know, when you overcorrect a little bit, I actually pulled the path even more that way. And I sliced it so big that it actually started left of the fairway, over the left rough, cleared the fairway, cleared the right rough, cleared the beach, and landed in the Pacific Ocean, probably about 70 yards right of where the hole is. So to this day, other people that played with me that day still say it's the biggest slice they've ever seen in their life because it was pretty close to hitting Alaska.
There we go. Not bad.
All right.
A couple different ones for us.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Last one. I think this came from a buddy of yours. This could be really interesting. What's worse, a golfer just starting out and buying all new top of the line gear, or two, new golfers starting out with just garbage gear that they bought on Kijiji for $20?
No, it's got to be the second one. I don't want to see the guy where we've cut a lot of grips off in our lives, and there's certain brands that are almost like you touch them and that the black stuff is all over your hands. You look like you've been in a shop for hours and you got to like basically light it on fire to get it off. And, you know, the clubs are they're rusty. You know, that's worse. Yeah. They're going to hate golf that way. You're not going to hate golf going out and buying all the new top of the line gear. So I got to go with the second one. Who asked this? Who's my buddy that asked this?
I'll have to look. I think it might've been Brock.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I'll have to double check. I know when it came in, I looked at it and I'm like, oh, this is Brock, one of Stephen's buddies.
Yeah. Brock claims he can hit drives 300 yards, yet I outdrive him. And, you know, I've hit a couple in my life, 300 yards, but
maybe
like,
he doesn't know how to measure a yard.
No, he's blind. So whatever. Thanks, Brock.
Is 230 out and 70 to the right?
He can get them straight, right? But he just, you know, one time he hit this bomb at a golf course and I was like, oh, you're good straight ahead. And it like went over a fence and it was, he absolutely nuked it into an airport. Yeah. And I, you know, give him credit for it, but he thinks that's all his drives, even though he doesn't play any golf. But enough about Brock. Why are we giving this guy any credit? Give your enough answer. Let's move along. Yeah, I'm
you
tired.
Know what? I gotta go with number two as well. I mean, you know what? If somebody goes out and takes the time to purchase all new equipment, you know, that's great. They're going to end up with decent equipment. And, you know, while we're not advocating that everybody has to go and spend thousands of dollars to have great golf equipment, buying something that's, you know, $20 that's, as you mentioned, rusty, nasty, old, you know what? They're going to hate the game.
And if they don't like the new equipment, you're going to get it cheap.
That's true too. So it's good for the rest of us.
Yeah, wait a year and maybe if they don't like golf, go, well, you're going to get a cheap one.
There you go. We can find it on eBay when we do a putter search again. How's go. That?
Yep.
All right, that's it for this week. Thanks, everyone, for sending those in. Keep the questions coming. We'll open up the mailbag every week at the start of the week at Flagstick, and then at Flagstick Golf on Instagram, and at T-Talk Podcast on Instagram as well, if people want to hook up with us there. So keep the questions coming, and we'll keep answering them.
Cool. Well, let's wrap it up. I did the tip of the week last week, Scotty.
Yes.
I got a new tip of the week. Got a new beverage made for me at a Rivendell golf course where I'm a proud member this year. Mentioned it as like a good cottage course, but joined out there this year. They made me their version of a transfusion, which was vodka, ginger ale, and purple Gatorade, and with a lime.
I gotta say,
if anyone's been to Rivendell, going from the clubhouse up to the 10th tee, and it's kind of a little bit small hill, and then you go down this big hill, it was done before it got down to that bottom of that big hill. That thing was delicious. Go ask for it next time you're there. So there's my tip of the week on a beverage you can get. Recommend try that one out.
All right. I like that. Well, my tip of the week is going to be a little bit different, a little less alcohol involved, but hey, you might need some after you hear the tip. Who knows? Basically, one of the biggest things for people this time of year is getting used to the short game as far as feel is concerned. I see a lot of players going out there trying to play short shots where they need a lot of elevation by opening up the club face and trying to get a lot of extra loft on the shot. The only problem is when they do that, you tend to kind of compromise where they strike the golf ball and maybe sometimes hit a little bit on the bottom. Give themselves a chance to really have a high number. So my recommendation for people, really, especially this time of year when you don't have the touch yet, just make sure you set up with those shots. And instead of having a lot of shaft lean forward, you know, towards the target, just get the shaft more straight up and down. That'll add a little bit more loft to the club. It'll still maintain a lot of the bounce. It'll also start the golf ball a little bit more online. Go with that. It's a simple way just to hit a high lofted shot. You don't have to go so extreme to have the face wide open, and you'll find that's very useful. So just look at the shaft position. Instead of having it lean forward, just get it up more into the center of your chest so that the handle goes right towards the center of your sternum. You're probably going to be in a good spot there to get enough loft on it to get a good controlled shot.
There we go. A little short. This was what you need this time of year, the short game tips, because they usually the short game goes pretty quickly over winter. Seeing some interesting chips from buddies recently. Let's just bump and run it right now. Don't have to feel that one out. It's just very simple. Let's just get on the ground and grab that gap wedge. That's been helping me for the first couple nine holes, but we'll see how long that lasts. That's it for this episode, Scotty. Great week at the Masters. 1 year away from that coming back. See ya. It was nice having it for 6 months, every 6 months, but don't see that happening. Augusta National, you were great. Golf course looked great. Had somebody's chirping saying that the greens look like crap. They're brown.
Ugh.
Yeah, I know. They're the worst. They won't even hear this. Best buddies never even listen to the podcast, so what does it matter? That's it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, everyone, for subscribing. Make sure you check out our contest coming up for some more tailor-made hats. We got some new Sim 2 hats. We got the Raw Wedge hats. You'll see them on the heads of the golfers probably anytime this week. But until next week, folks, enjoy the golf course. Enjoy the beverages. Enjoy the chipping, the putting. Enjoy it all. We will chat with you next week.